Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the SmackDown Summary here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always when we talk about SmackDown by Sondra. Sondra, I've got two words for you.
Yes, Kenny.
Brand warfare.
Dun dun dun, brand warfare. Yeah, brand warfare's cool and all, but Nikki Cross was on this episode of SmackDown, Kenny.
Okay, so I need to ask you a question. So, Steve Gunn.
Yep.
Had messaged me last night and said, oh, something's happened on SmackDown. I was like, is it good? And he was like, yes. And I said, should I wait or do you want to tell me? And he was like, just tell me. And he was like, okay, Nikki Cross debuts. And then I just wrote, no. And I was going to write, no way. But this is the lengths I go to, ladies and gentlemen. In the middle of writing, no way, I stopped after writing, no, to message Sondra to go, get off the internet.
Which you did.
I was like, is this bad news? And I was like, no. I just know it's a Tuesday. Steve. I know that Steve. radio edit. So Steve had said, you know, what's wrong? And I was like, it's Tuesday. Sondra will be around. And if I don't message her this right now, and to prove my point further, you were in line at that point going to vote for Donald Trump, and I interrupted you. So I guess my question is, was it worth waiting to see it take place?
It was very much worth waiting to see it take place. I had no idea that Nikki was going to be on SmackDown. I got so excited when Sanity's music hit, and I was like, wait, what is happening? And I just kind of lost my shit. So thank you to everyone who told me to stay off the internet. I got like 5 tweets from people, too, that were just like, avoid SmackDown spoilers, avoid SmackDown spoilers. And none of the tweets contained any information. None of them even said that there was a debut. None of them said anything at all. And I appreciate people for being lovely.
It's funny, I feel like all these people, oh, SmackDown, Survivor Series is so rubbish, and I'm like, I'm really excited about Survivor Series.
I'm actually really excited about Survivor Series too. I don't know, this is the kind of show that's, I guess, made for us. I mean, Shane McMahon's still a prick, but whatever.
Yeah, although I'm actually going to give Shane McMahon, we'll talk about this in the open segment, there was this moment of real subtlety that nobody's talking about that I thought was genius, which we'll get to in just a moment. But let's talk SmackDown. It's not, I mean, a lot of it's just kind of, Survivor Series is coming, let's throw things at you. But, Sondra yawns 3 minutes into the podcast.
Well, I'm sorry, I'm tired, I just woke up.
It's 12:32 p.m.
I know.
You're an adult.
I can be an adult and sleep at ridiculous times of the day.
Show opens with Paige coming out. Looking fine.
She looks great. Her shoes were so cute, and I was jealous of them.
I love that she like schooled that guy on Twitter, because there was a guy who had like, I'm gonna find it actually, because I think it's just so redonkulous that it like deserves to be called out for like how. Give me 1 second.
Is this the thing where he said that women in WWE dress like whores?
So, what he said was, it's in Sondra's timeline, but I need to go past the SmackDown messages, which is like 49 messages down. Danny on Twitter said, WWE is bad company for ladies. They make women... God, Danny, you must have been valedictorian. WWE is bad company for ladies. They make women dressed in clothes that make them look like whores, and this is not what we need for the WWE. We need women to respect their body. And Paige said, wrong. We dress the way we want to dress. We aren't coerced or forced into dressing like anything other than what we feel comfortable, confident, and beautiful in. The men technically show more skin than the women. Does that make them whores? Or...
I love Paige. Paige is awesome. I am fast becoming more and more of a Paige fan. Like, I've always liked her, but I think she's absolutely killing it right now, and it sucks that she can't compete in ring, but I love seeing her on the show, and I love her social media presence because she shuts down idiot people. Did you see where someone put his profile?
No,
this Danny person?
I mean, I do not want to in any way be the sort of person that, like, makes fun of somebody for their looks.
Oh, I'm talking more about his bio than his looks.
Well,
hi,
I'm
a single male. I do scrap metal for work, which is fine. I'm looking for a girlfriend or wife to love me. Please talk to me. Thanks, you.
Danny, and then the number is 8405-7496. Mm-hmm. One more time. Danny, 840-574-96. He has two photographs, and his the photograph where he you see more of him and you can see like a dresser in the background is kind of my reaction to when I saw Danny.
I haven't seen this picture, but
let me say it is absolutely sensational.
I'm so excited now. But no, it's the type of Twitter like account that just like trolls people or is desperate. I can't even tell if it's a bot.
I feel the noise to this picture is that's my only noise I can make. So Sandra has this coming into her inbox on the Facebooks.
Immediately. Let's see. Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's definitely just kind of an oh, honey kind of look, isn't it? Like,
Well, I love this. He says that women in WWE dress like whores. And he retweeted Sasha Banks doing a sexy pose in a mirror in a hotel.
Yes, he did.
He's written two tweets before that. I am so happy that Triple H got hurt during his match with whoever he fought. Who gives a shit about the other person? Also, Triple H is a piece of shit. He should not be allowed to wrestle and be a manager at the same time. He should have to pick one or the other. The company should stop flip-flopping on his stupid fucking ass and leave him as a general manager or leave him as a wrestler. He should not be able to do both in the company. They should change the rules and regulations in the company. If he is a wrestler, get paid as a... So I didn't fall off a cliff there. Although, oh my god. This guy. He's responded to a fake Alexa Bliss profile that says, Danny, talk to me. It's me, Alexa Bliss. And he says, hi, Alexa Kaufman. You're a very beautiful woman and very amazing. I'm sorry if I said anything on Twitter that defended you or any other women that was listening to this. I still think Paige is not a very good general manager.
He also, on October 18, as I'm scrolling down his timeline, I don't know why I'm so amused by some of these accounts, but... replies to something Paige said. Hi, honey, this is Danny Theron Jones, single male in Utah, telling you that I love you, Saraya.
Oh, God. Oh, wait. So he actually had a response to Paige and what she said about the whore thing.
Uh-huh.
He said, I don't really care how you feel about me or what anyone thinks about me. Everybody has their own opinions and their own mind to think however they want. That does not make them a bad person. But I do think that you are the biggest piece of shit on the planet.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, Danny Theron Jones. I love it. He's just like, do you know what though? Like, we've all different opinions and that's totally fine. We should like embrace our opinions and that's fine. I just think you're the biggest piece of shit on the planet.
Oh no, he's talking to Sam Jackson. He's talking to Sam Jackson and calling Sam Jackson the biggest piece of shit.
Okay. Oh yeah, because I forgot. Paige has a vagina, so he can't say that any woman's a piece of shit.
Apparently.
I want to send Danny Jones like videos of women taking a shit, because I don't think he thinks that happens.
this has devolved into something different.
Anyway, so SmackDown.
Paige, man, sometimes Twitter trolls are just hilarious. This feels like an old like revisit to Spazzomania.
It was all right for you because you didn't participate. I do just need to say, though, that one of the funniest things I've heard in a while was the appearance of Robert Duffin on the Pod of Thunder.
I did listen to this. I can't believe they thought I was Scottish Undertaker.
I know. I love that you were like, oh, he's not Scottish enough.
Well,
that's
no.
Your argument.
It's true, though. If I were committed to a gimmick like that, I would be a lot more deliberate about it.
I love the bit where they were like, where he was like, did Sandra do this Pod of Thunder thing? And one of them was like, no, she was just belligerent.
But the thing is, I think I did do the Pod of Thunder thing. I can't really remember.
You did do it. But what I feel like happened is that they had to coerce you for about 20 minutes to do it off air, probably.
No, I was willing to do that because I knew my voice would sound cool with thunder effects behind it.
They also do a bit where they talk about Chris Benoit and there's the Making a Murderer theme tune behind it. Because that's...
Oh, is that what that song was?
Yes, that's okay. That one.
I haven't seen Making a Murderer yet.
So you would love that show. But he was really funny on it. And like, it's just one of those ones I go, oh, it's really nice to not be the most offensive podcast in the world anymore.
Right?
I feel like I'm like James Corden when he went to America and got shit. Like, oh, remember when I used to do Gavin and Stacey and I was like quite edgy? No, I'm not. No, I just talk about Spin and Raw and stuff. Anyway. So Paige comes out, she looks great, she introduces Shane, he comes out. I don't know about you. I was quite surprised at how, like, I thought some of the fans might not be happy with him, but I was very surprised at how much they booed him.
Yeah, well, I mean, the fans are starting to come around to my way of thinking that Shane McMahon makes no sense and becomes an absolute asshole every November. So, yeah, I was booing him because I actually said on Twitter, I was like, oh, I'm so glad that Paige is opening the show and not Shane McMahon. Hit send, and immediately she's like, and I would like to introduce. And I was like, oh, for fuck's sake, why? Like, I wanted Paige to manage things generally, especially when they were in the UK, her, you know, home country and whatnot. I was like, yeah, let's let Paige run the show tonight. Nope. Has to be Shane McMahon all over the place talking. But did you notice how they sort of, like, they mentioned the Crown Jewel thing, they mentioned the Best in the World thing, and if the plan was to turn him heel, then this promo didn't really indicate that, right? Because Shane McMahon was like, you know, I just did what I did for the good of SmackDown Live, and he was talking about how he didn't necessarily think that he was the best in the world, but SmackDown was the best in the world, and it was all about brand warfare, and it was just a very strange promo to me, where they didn't really want to mention Crown Jewel too much, but they had to bring in the whole trophy thing, because everyone's kind of like, what the fuck? So,
well, it's part of the storyline, so they kind of had to mention it, like, even though they didn't really... I think what I thought was funny about this was, so Paige is like, you know, hey, Mr. It's almost like Paige is taking the piss out of him.
Oh, yeah. Paige is great.
He's like, hey, Mr. Best in the World. But there's a really cool moment, and I don't know if many people picked up on it, because I've not heard anybody talking about it, where Paige is like, let's get a photo with Mr. Best in the World. And then he, like, grabs the trophy off her to do a photo just on his own with it.
Oh, and no, then, like, I didn't.
And it's, like, very, very quick. He they're doing a photo together, and he just, like, grabs the trophy. I'll have one of my own now, thanks. And I thought it was a really good piece of storytelling where, like, she's taking the piss out of him, but he's kind of buying it deep down, even though he's trying to pretend like he's not.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. I mean, so the whole idea is that they're now going to do the Survivor Series thing. They're talking about, you know, Shane doesn't really think he's the best in the world. The fans do not want to think of him in that regard in any way, shape, or form.
No, not at all, because he's not. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know. Watching this opening segment, I was like, I'm so happy I didn't watch that show for, like,
I
all of the reasons.
I would love to have seen your face.
I probably would have just, like, stormed out in a huff.
What made you more angry? No Biker Undertaker at WrestleMania or Shane being the best in the world?
No Biker Undertaker at WrestleMania.
Wow.
Shane being the best in the world is just like me throwing up my hands and going, sure, why not?
We laughed so hard.
Like, I bet.
Because, like, anybody who really got angry about this, it's an all-American tournament for the best of the world in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, I was already just annoyed enough at the World Cup and the build to it and the fact that it was all Americans and the whole thing was just kind of stupid. So... do I really think that the winner of this tournament was going to be the best wrestler in the world? No, I really don't. Or the best anything in the world? No, I don't. But Shane McMahon inserting himself at the last minute, just, it was peak Shane McMahon, right? Like, Shane McMahon does ridiculous things in the name of brand warfare. Last year, he decided to invade Raw for no reason and become a dickhead. So this year,
No. Last year, he wanted to make sure that the only way for them to be superior was to go under siege.
So he became a dickhead and invaded Raw for no reason without provocation. And this year, he's decided to enter himself in the Best in the World tournament because The Miz got injured. And he later on, he threatens that he was going to have fired The Miz if Shane McMahon didn't win the match. It doesn't make any sense, whatever, whatever. But he wanted SmackDown to be supreme and win the Best in the World trophy and bring it to SmackDown, even though these trophies do not matter. So SmackDown won and Shane McMahon beat Dolph Ziggler. And how are Shane McMahon and Dolph Ziggler the finals for Best in the World? I don't understand any of this.
So anyway, we're now talking about Survivor Series. Who's going to be the captain of the men's team? It's going to be Daniel Bryan. He comes out very happy. Fans love him.
Which this made sense to me that Shane McMahon would pick Daniel Bryan as the captain because they do have a history together based on some dissension, some mutual respect. But Shane has worked with Bryan before and would trust him. So that made sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Bryan was going to be the captain. But then The Miz comes out. And he's like, I deserve to be the captain with my performance at the World Cup. Paige and Shane have, like, a conference, and they agree that Bryan and Miz are going to be co-captains. and the fans are not happy that Miz is not the captain, which is weird. And Brian looks irritated, and that's the end of the segment. It was bonkers.
It was very strange, and it's one of those situations, though, where the Miz is completely right and completely justified. Like, what has Daniel Bryan done to be the captain, really? Like, lose his WWE Championship match against AJ Styles? Lose to The Miz multiple times as well. So The Miz coming out and saying, you know, I am two-thirds of the best in the world. When he said that he and Shane should be co-besties, I cracked up. I thought that was really funny. But, I mean, Miz is kind of justified saying, no, I deserve to be the captain more than Daniel Bryan deserves to be the captain, because look at these accomplishments that I've done. And most of that trophy, most of the reason that that you got to be in the tournament for best in the world is due to me, because I kept winning or whatever. I mean, I guess it could have been anyone on SmackDown. Had Miz lost to Rey Mysterio or something like that, then Rey Mysterio would have been two-thirds of the best in the world. But he's not. It's The Miz. And he, I guess, made a valid claim. And at this point, I was just like, why do people care so much about being captains? Because it never really has any effect on anything, right? Because the rules for being captain, as we'll see in this show, are not very clear. It seems that Miz and Bryan, as co-captains, can pick their team. And then the tag team captains can also pick their team. But the women can't pick their team because they couldn't find a captain, because Charlotte Flair was apparently the only one qualified to be captain, question mark, even though they have other women on the roster. So the whole thing is strange. But, I mean, Daniel Bryan and The Miz being co-captains of the Survivor Series team and then picking the team kind of the way they do throughout the show was actually a pretty fun dynamic. So I liked that.
I think that with the Survivor Series thing, and I'm not saying this is like, you know, this is really good storytelling, but like the Survivor Series brand warfare thing is kind of bonkers, and it's like a little kind of in canon 1 month thing that doesn't really matter in any other way. If you can't get past that, you're probably not going to enjoy it. But if you can, and you can accept that it's just a bit ridiculous, then it's quite fun. You know, I think that's kind of the way. I think if you ever dissect the Survivor Series stuff, it kind of doesn't really make much sense. But then, like, there was a match they did in the 90s. I think it was, like, the 1990 Survivor Series. They did this one time, right? And then they never did it again because it was terrible. So basically the idea was they would, you know, they remember they used to do just, like, 5-on-5 men's matches throughout the night. They'd do, like, five of them. But in the 1990 Survivor Series, they did this thing where every winner would go into an ultimate Survivor team at the end of the night, all heels against babyfaces. So, like, on the babyface side, there was only, like, three survivors, Tito Santana, the Ultimate Warrior, and Hulk Hogan, and there was, like, five heels. But by the end of it, it was just like, oh, my God, this is too much. Go away. So they just never did it again.
That sounds like a lot. That sounds, I mean, you'd have to have that many Survivor Series matches to build to this big Ultimate Survivor Series match.
I mean, they did have, like, five 5-on-5s.
That's too many. That's too many of the same match type.
I think it worked then, though, because you never saw a lot of people facing each other.
And that's, you know, like, the thing, like, I like about Survivor Series, the way they're doing it now. I like the whole brand warfare thing in the sense of, I like that we're getting to see Becky Lynch versus Ronda Rousey, which is a match that we can't see anywhere else. I like the fact that Shinsuke Nakamura versus Seth Rollins should be really good, right? That's a match we haven't gotten the opportunity to see because Shinsuke's been on SmackDown the entire time he's been on the main roster and Seth Rollins has been on Raw. So,
and gender killed him.
Yes, we're trying not to think about that, but but it's one of those things where I like that, you know, I like that sort of brand warfare. I like the whole Raw versus SmackDown Survivor Series, like 5-on-5 matches. I think those are cool. It's just more the internal logic of storytelling within the show. Like, you can do that type of show and you can build to it, making the rules consistent. This is me banging on about rules again, but that, you know, that's who I am.
Rules help control the fun.
Rules help control the fun. And I would like to know, being the captain of a team, does that mean you get to pick your teams? Does it not? Why do the general managers get to appoint the captains that they do? I, you know, like, Daniel Bryan and The Miz didn't really have to fight to become co-captains, but then the New Day versus Usos, like, the New Day and the Usos had to fight to become the captain. But then on the women's team, there are no qualifying matches even, which we'll get to. So it's just, it seems haphazard within the internal logical consistency of the actual program that I'm watching on television. I would just like it to be, I don't know, a little more balanced and a little more even and make a little more sense to me.
I like the idea of like next year that they do this thing where like the GMs are in like a boardroom and they kind of go, hey, and they bring people in and be like, hey, why is it important for you to win at Survivor Series? And have like a couple of people be like, I don't care. But okay, cool. See you next week. And just have them, like Samoa Joe just stare at them and be like, what am I getting paid for this?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you get like double your salary if you win. Okay, I'll kill them all.
Yeah, I think it'd be cool, like, interview people to see why they want to be on the Survivor Series just as something different. I don't know. Like,
anyway,
I just don't like that it's so inconsistent is my thing.
Backstage, Shane's
and also, argument. Like, did you hear the point where Miz was talking to Shane and Shane was like, well, if I wouldn't have stepped in and done this, then you would be fired, so.
Yep.
Like, I'm sorry. Well, there's a reason the crowd is booing Shane McMahon.
That does make sense, though. Because Shane did say whoever gets to the final and doesn't win will be fired.
Yeah, which, I mean, that still doesn't make any sense. But the way Shane said it, it was almost like, well, if I hadn't have won that match for you, then you would have been fired. So, like, what if Shane McMahon had lost to Dolph Ziggler?
Would he have fired
himself?
Well, no, there's nepotism.
Or would he have fired The Miz?
You got to understand nepotism, Sandra.
Shane McMahon is infuriating.
He's a McMahon.
I know. That's the problem.
Anyway, so Shane ends up talking to Brian and Miz. They can't agree on who they want to be in the team. And Shane ends up saying, you know, they basically both need to pick the team together. It's essentially the message.
Mm-hmm.
New Day versus the Usos. They have a match that goes like 17 minutes and it's really, really good. Kind of harkens back to their classic matches they had last year. In the end, the Usos actually defeat the New Day. The Usos are celebrating when the New Day is dejected, but the Usos end up telling the New Day that they want them on the team at Survivor Series. So there is going to be a 5-on-5 team, 20-man Survivor Series match. We've got the Usos and the New Day and three other teams. Oh, the Colognes are going to come back, aren't they? And against five Raw teams. So are there 10 tag teams?
I don't know who's all on Raw, but on SmackDown we have the New Day. We have the Big Bar is otherwise occupied. We have the New Day and the Usos. We have Sanity. There's, I'm sure, another one. Who else is on SmackDown? The Colognes.
The Club, the Colognes.
Oh, the Club! I forgot about the Club. Yeah, it'll be probably them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unless R-Truth and Ty Dillinger can, you know, reform their alliance, which I'd be okay with. But this match was great, though. It was so great. I loved it. The New Day and the Usos, we have seen them fight so many times in the past, right? And it seems like one of those things where I should be like, okay, we've seen this so many times. But it's always so good. And there were a lot of really fun spots in it, like Xavier Woods playing music on the outside and Kofi Kingston, like, sort of bouncing in the ropes to the tune that Francesca was playing and then, like, shaking and gyrating at the Usos so that Biggie Langston could come and, like, take them out because it was a distraction, and it was just really, really great. Biggie Langston needs to stop diving in nasty, nasty ways, because there was one point where he just, like, got chucked out and landed on his back on the outside and it looked real sore. And then when he did the spear off the apron and basically just ran headfirst with his head into the announce table, I'm just like, you need to stop doing this to your body. It's not healthy for you. He's always been one to kind of like dive too much and do these things, but I don't know this. I was really, really into this match and I wasn't that invested in who becomes captain and who doesn't become captain, but just by the end of it, they had me really, really invested. And then when the Usos won, I was actually pretty surprised, because it seems like we've been just kind of having the New Day on top and having the New Day on top. And since the Bludgeon Brothers killed them at WrestleMania, the Usos haven't really been able to do a whole lot, right? Like, they've been kind of just getting back into our consciousness with the whole AJ Bryan storyline leading into Crown Jewel, where the Usos defeated AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan tag team, because why? But the Usos are kind of coming back into our consciousness and being able to do something makes me really happy, because they're one of the best tag teams they have on the roster. And it, I don't know, it's been just disheartening to see that they've been just kind of either not on TV or not doing a whole lot. So I like that they're getting to do a thing. And then that show of respect from the Usos to the New Day afterwards, because they've gone to war, they've gone to battle, they've had all of these amazing, amazing matches together and really did build the SmackDown Tag Team division until the Bludgeon Brothers came and bludgeoned it down. And that makes me so sad because I miss Luke Harper. But, you know, it's kind of true, right? The Tag Team division suffered for a long time after the New Day and the Usos were kind of just, like, killed at WrestleMania. And it's nice to see them doing a thing again.
Then we get...
Did we mention that Shane McMahon is on the Survivor Series team? Did we talk
We didn't. So it's going to be Miz, Brian, and Shane, and then we're going to figure out who the other two are. Miz and Brian end up arguing about Rey Mysterio being in the team because Brian wants one, Miz doesn't. So it's going to be the winner of the Rey Mysterio. If Rey can beat Andrade Cien Almas, he gets on the team, and if he can't, he will not.
Or if he impresses the Miz. He didn't say necessarily if he won. He had to impress the Miz. But the dynamic between Miz and Brian here was actually kind of cool. When they both pick Shane, biggest possible eye roll for me. Because, of course, they're like, we need the best in the world on our Survivor Series team. And Shane tries to pretend to be humble and be like, oh, well, of course, I suppose. If you both want me to be on the team, then I suppose I will. And I'm just like, fuck off. But Miz and Brian having to discuss these things, and then the way the direction was actually kind of funny. They had this, like, long, awkward pause at the end, and they're just like, this is weird. This is weird. We're having mutual respect and agreeing on a thing because they both wanted Shane McMahon on the team. And building sort of, like, an unlikely alliance between Brian and the Miz is really intriguing storytelling, I think.
Up next, we get Becky Lynch coming out. She cuts a really good promo back on Ronda Rousey. Ronda cut a great promo on Raw, on Becky. Ronda might be one of the best promos in the company, actually, which is weird. Never thought I'd be saying
Ronda?
Mm-hmm. She has been cutting...
I do not agree.
I don't really mind if you don't agree, but she is great. She came out there in Manchester in a very pro-Becky crowd, and she cut a promo that got people cheering Becky and cheering her and excited for the match. That's talent. You don't just get that in 2 minutes. That is real talent to do that.
There Ronda are people feels on the authentic. Roster. I think she still feels a little like, I don't know. Real? She's gotten a lot better for sure.
She feels real. She feels real. And nobody feels real apart from Becky and her and maybe one or two others. Like, she's cut, I mean, put it this way, she's cutting better promos than the majority of the roster in terms of how authentic they feel. She sold the Becky match. Yeah. I see all the time people are just like impressed by the fact that she's doing so well. As am I. Like, her matches feel really big. She does this thing in promos, which I think is really clever, and apparently she does write some of her own stuff, where she brings realism into her angles. Mm-hmm. Like, she mentioned on Raw that Becky Lynch used to be a stewardess, which mm-hmm. is what she used to do, right? And then she brings up, you know, Ronda was like, I love this new personality Becky Lynch has got. Like, this is brilliant. I love it. She's going to be a big challenge to me. And, you know, she tells me, you know, you're the man, well, I'm the baddest bitch on the planet. And she was just like, she was building the match by building Becky. And yeah, for somebody who's new, I'm pretty impressed by it.
Yeah, but, I think she's doing very well for how new she is. I think she still kind of stumbles a little bit. But I mean, I guess that makes it feel more authentic and more real. Her promos kind of remind me of Ken Shamrock in a way. Just how they're a little like awkward and a little like off, but I think she's better than Ken Shamrock, but
oh, yeah.
Like, she's better at building something and making it seem important, I guess. I saw a lot of criticism of Ronda actually for like mocking Becky for like going to clown college and like being a stewardess and stuff. And when I watched Ronda's promo, it didn't come across to me as she was necessarily mocking her. It was just kind of highlighting different life experiences to say that Ronda was a natural born killer, right? Like, when you were in clown college, I was doing this, or when you were waking up to go to work, my mother was waking me up and trying to break my arm and that kind of stuff. So that kind of formed Ronda into the baddest woman on the planet. And I thought it was a very effective promo for sure. I think her delivery still, she could use a little bit more work on that. But
I prefer her delivery the way it is. I don't want her to be polished. Like, I don't want Brock Lesnar to be polished. Do you know what I mean?
Like, I just want Ronda to look a little more comfortable in her skin. Like, when Becky Lynch or Samoa Joe talks, they don't seem necessarily, like, polished and sanitized, but they're just very comfortable in their own skin, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess it works for me. But anyway, Becky comes out, she does a promo back about how, you know, she's a champion that wills herself through adversity, injury, defeat. Ronda hasn't been challenged yet. She's the man. And then she said, you know, you said that you're the baddest bitch on the planet, but Survivor Series, I'm going to make you mine. And then she said that she wants a fight. Sanity's music hits. They walk on stage, the three guys in Sanity, and then they point to the back, and out comes Nikki Cross to a big pop. Becky's kind of taken aback by it. Nikki comes down. She says, you know, do you want to play? Becky grabs the mic and says, you know, the champ doesn't play, the champ fights. And that leads us to Becky Lynch versus Nikki Cross. They have a 5-minute pretty competitive match back and forth. And in the end, Becky gets the disarmer and the victory on Nikki. What did you make of Becky's promo, Nikki's debut, and the match?
Okay, there's a lot here, right? So Becky's promo I loved. I think Becky is great. I think her kind of calling out Ronda for what a lot of people took as, you know, Ronda mocking Becky for her life and mocking Becky for being a hardworking woman and not necessarily like being brought up to be a wrestler. Like, Becky had a different path to wrestling than Ronda Rousey did. Like, Ronda Rousey's mother kind of, you know, brought her into fighting and made her want to become the best athlete in the world and that kind of thing, right? Becky had like a very eclectic life before that, going to clown college, being a stewardess, that kind of stuff. And I like that Becky's like, you know, you haven't been in the ring with me. And she's, you know, like, this is kind of her territory. And I think Becky just absolutely shines. I think she outshines Ronda in these promos, and she outshines Ronda in charisma, which is hard to do because Ronda has a lot of charisma and is very likable. But the interesting thing to me was, like, when Ronda was cutting her promo, people were still chanting for Becky. And I think Ronda played it really well, where she was like, yeah, no, I like Becky Lynch too. And I don't think Becky's tearing down Ronda in any way. So I'm super hyped for this match. I don't know. It's one of those things where Becky Lynch just seems to be on another level right now. And that's why I don't have a problem necessarily with the match finish that we'll get to. But like, Becky Lynch just really seems to be the most over in the company, right? Like, even Miz had that segment where he was on the phone trying to book a talk show appearance. And he's like, what? They want Becky? And I loved that. I loved that the Miz even was acknowledging Becky's, you know, popularity and prestige and place in the company, because everybody wants to see Stone Cold Becky Lynch, right? And then, so for her to be like, who wants to challenge the champ? Who wants to challenge me? And for it to be Nikki Cross was so perfect, because of course Nikki would want to play, right? Of course Nikki would want to answer that challenge, because she's crazy. And like, Becky Lynch is the absolute best, but I think the dynamic between Nikki and Becky was great too, where Nikki's just like, yeah, I want to play with Nikki, Becky. And Becky's just like, who do you think you are to step to the champ, to step to the man? Like, you're not good enough for me. But then in the match itself, which I thought was very, very good, I mean, Nikki did bring it to Becky. Becky Lynch won, and I was kind of surprised that there was an actual finish to it. I guess Sanity can't necessarily get involved because that'd be men attacking a woman, and WWE won't allow us to have fun. But it's one of those things where, and I thought back when I saw the end of the match, I was like, when we recorded Yellow Ropes Forever and you asked me that very pointed question about how do you feel about people losing in their debut, I was like,
subtle mind games, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep. Uh-huh. I was like, oh, he was definitely not just asking me about Mercedes Martinez versus Nikki Cross. He was definitely trying to gauge what my reaction was going to be for Nikki Cross versus Becky Lynch. And at this point, I love Nikki with all of my heart. We know this. At this point, it makes sense for Becky Lynch to win that match. It really does, because Becky is the champ. She's the man. She's the best. She's on top of the world. She feels like she's on another level in WWE. So Nikki Cross was good, and Nikki Cross was great, and Nikki Cross brought it to Becky and had a great match with Becky, but she really shouldn't have won this match, because that would devalue Becky and make her feel like less of a thing, right? And Becky needs to be on top and needs to get definitive wins. I think I said on Yellow Ropes Forever, I kind of like when people face someone who's a formidable opponent as opposed to just a squash match that she can win easily. If it's Becky Lynch versus Mandy Rose, Becky Lynch should be able to take it to Mandy Rose and defeat her pretty easily. But Nikki Cross is an unknown quantity. Nikki Cross is very prominent in NXT. She's one of the biggest stars in NXT right now. So for Becky Lynch to get a win over Nikki Cross, it feels like an important thing. And for Nikki Cross to be able to bring it to Becky Lynch the way she did, I mean, she looked like she belonged and she could hang in that scene. So I think it actually helped if I try to divorce my mind from that whole, oh, but this is WWE and nice things don't happen to people that I love, what if she just goes and joins Sanity in the Abyss? That's not what I want to happen. I want to see Nikki all over the place. Like, this felt to me more like when John Cena would issue his open challenge and you would get Antonio Cesaro versus John Cena. Like, of course John Cena's going to win that match, but Antonio Cesaro was made to look like a really big deal by having that match with John Cena. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. So I'll kind of summarize my thoughts on this because I can't stay too long on this. But I actually think that what you were talking about earlier about Ronda and Becky is actually the reason why this works so well, is because they're very different performers and they're at very different stages. And that's why it works so well. Becky Lynch as a performer is going to be completely different to Ronda, because Becky's had a career of kind of being held down, whereas Ronda's got a career of immediately getting success. And mm-hmm. I like her back and forth. I like that Becky feels super confident and that Ronda's finding her feet. I like that I like everything about it. I think it's a perfect match. I love both of them. I'm really psyched for it. I saw some people were kind of like, oh, Nikki losing her debut, that's rubbish. And I'm like, I think you always need to watch something before you judge it. And I watched it and I didn't think it was a burial in any way, shape or form. Nikki Cross is not going to be in the women's title picture right now. But she's there for the reason that we've been talking about for weeks. They need new women on SmackDown. Nikki Cross is now a new woman on SmackDown. She didn't get jobbed out. She wanted to play. That was her thing. And she played with the champ, and the champ almost broke her arm. That's what happened. I don't think the match got into like third gear or anything, but I don't think it needed to. I think the match was good. Nikki looked good, and it was a pretty decent debut. So I didn't have any problems with it. So...
And I'm just so happy to see her, because we do desperately need more women on SmackDown, as evidenced by a segment later.
We do. We had more Miz and Bryan arguing. The main event is going to be Samoa Joe versus Jeff Hardy, and the winner will be in the team.
Again, I'm super on the Miz's side here. I'm just saying, he's picking Samoa Joe and Daniel Bryan's picking Jeff Hardy. Really?
I mean, that's just a babyface heel thing. It's wrestling. You know, it's like, it's always going to be that. We get Rey Mysterio versus Andrade Cien Almas. Zelina Vega's not there due to an injury that she got at Evolution. I saw some people going, is Zelina Vega being buried because she's not there? She's just injured. That's all it is. We got Rey and Almas. They only did a 10-minute match. I got this feeling here when Rey beat Almas. I liked the match. I didn't think they quite went to where they could. But I feel like they could have a really great 25-minute match in a pay-per-view one day.
Yeah, I think if they were allowed to build it and build a story and whatnot, I think it could be really great. I liked this. I wasn't jumping out of my chair for it. I was still pretty excited about Nikki, so I was kind of coming down from that. But I really did like it, and I thought that they wrestled each other very well. It's something I do want to see more of. I was kind of surprised that they just threw it out there on this show as just, here's Rey Mysterio versus Andrade Cien Almas. It seems like that should be a match that should be built to a little bit more. And maybe we'll get it in future. Maybe this will set something up. I will say I definitely prefer when Rey Mysterio does a 619 into a splash, the way he finished this match, than just the 619. I'm not the biggest fan of the 619 as a finisher. So I appreciate that Andrade didn't just lose to the 619, because, I don't know, it's so convoluted. You have to, like, lie there in the ropes forever, and then you just get kicked in the face once, and then you're dead. I don't really like it. But it makes a lot more sense if you get kicked in the face and fall backwards and get splashed, and then you lose. So, yeah, I liked it. And, I mean, they're both real good at wrestling. And I'm glad to see Andrade doing things.
Reyes looked really good in his return.
Yeah.
He got RKO'd by Orton after the match, so I don't know where that's going to go. Orton's going to be in the team, or he's going to try and fuck SmackDown at Survivor Series. I'm looking forward to seeing Rey in the ring with guys like Braun Strowman and Drew McIntyre and stuff like that at Survivor Series. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, it feels like Rey Mysterio can definitely be a player. Like when he was involved in the World Cup shenanigans and just kind of felt like another guy, it was kind of disappointing, especially hearing that he didn't even go to the finals or anything like that. But I'm kind of hoping that seeing him with some of these other performers that, you know, we kind of never thought we'd get a chance to see Rey Mysterio versus a lot of these people, right? It should be kind of cool, and I hope that it highlights him, because he is a big star. Like, he's a big veteran star who can still go, it seems, and I like that.
We got a quick promo backstage from AJ Styles talking about the Brock Lesnar match. Last year he faced Brock and he gave Brock all he had, but it wasn't enough. But this year it's going to be different. He's going to beat Brock Lesnar. And he said that wasn't a prediction, it's a spoiler. So I'm looking forward to see what they can do in a second match. And see where
their match before was really good. And I like this sort of like serious AJ Styles who's like, no, I can win. He's not the most exciting, but I'm kind of into it. Do you think we're going to get Randy Orton versus Rey Mysterio? Do you think that's where this is going? Or is it just Randy being Randy?
I think we'll get Randy and Rey Mysterio at the December pay-per-view.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. I think that's where it's going. It fits in with Orton's kind of like, I'm going to destroy all your heroes thing. Up next, Paige is in the ring. She's going to introduce the women's team for Survivor Series. She brings it Carmella, who's there with R-Truth. She brings it Naomi. She brings it Sonya Deville. She brings it Asuka. And finally, she's going to bring out Charlotte Flair. But it wasn't Charlotte Flair. It was Mandy Rose with a microphone. Mandy said that she wasn't the blonde that they ordered, but surprise, Paige told her she wasn't taking Charlotte's spot on the team. Mandy's pretty annoyed that she wasn't picked, but Sonya's the one that, because of obviously who eliminated who in the Battle Royal. Mandy mocks the women, calls Asuka yesterday's news. Carmella's title reign short and pointless, like her dancing.
Carmella's like, at least I had one, and then danced at her.
Which is exactly what she should have done.
Yep.
Asks if anyone still feels the glow, maybe her husband, and then Naomi starts to brawl with her. Sonya pulls Mandy and Naomi apart, and they kind of stare each other down to sort of close the segment. So I know you're not happy about the fact that Paige put the team together, but how do you feel about the team overall for the women at Survivor Series?
It's kind of who the team has to be because there are so few women on SmackDown. It doesn't look very exciting. It looks kind of lackluster. I mean, I like a lot of the women on the team. I like Naomi fine. I don't think she's a great wrestler or anything, but she, as a character, she's fine.
I think if it comes down to Charlotte, Asuka, and Naomi as the three left in the match, it should be pretty good.
Yeah, that should be fine. I like that Sonya got picked instead of Mandy. I don't really know how to feel about Sonya Deville, Mandy Rose dissension at this point because I really like them together. I like them being best friends. I like DeMandy's donuts. I like them going on road trips and eating donuts together. So it's, you know, but it is another women's story to tell. And that is something that I like. I like that Mandy Rose is kind of like, hey, I eliminated Sonya from the Battle Royal. Why is she on the team and not me? It makes sense that Mandy Rose would ask those questions. I think Mandy Rose actually comported herself quite well on the microphone here. I think she's pretty decent at cutting promos and talking and whatnot. It wasn't perfect, but it didn't come across as stilted as a lot of times performers are when they have to do these stupid interruptions and like mock everyone who's just kind of standing in the ring. So the team's fine. It's kind of take it or leave it. It does kind of bother me that apparently like Paige wanted Charlotte to be the captain. Charlotte was like, I don't really feel qualified to be the captain. And Paige was like, right, guess there can't be a captain then because literally no one else on SmackDown is qualified to be the captain. She couldn't have done a qualifying match. She couldn't have done anything like that. I mean, I'm actually, again, rare times I agree with Lana, but I'm kind of with Lana, who put on Twitter, like, no women's qualifying matches for Survivor Series, and then a gif of her just doing, like, a ugh face. Do I want Lana on the team? No, of course I don't. But, you know, it would have been nice to have some qualifying matches and whatnot. And it kind of sucks that Zelina Vega's injured, too. What type of injury does she have? Is she out for a while?
I don't know. I know the Observer comes out tonight, so we should know the injury, but I don't know what it is.
Okay, because I would have quite liked to see Zelina Vega on this team instead of, I don't know, like Carmella or Sonya, maybe. I don't know. Because Zelina can actually wrestle pretty well. Although I like Sonya, and I'm hoping she can kind of like get some spots and maybe show that she's gotten better at wrestling. This segment did accomplish maybe setting up a secondary women's story with tension between Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. Maybe we're going to get that in kind of like a lower card story, that kind of thing. The most interesting thing to me is that Charlotte Flair didn't come out here. Charlotte, we don't know where she is. She's backstage brooding or something and feeling sad about the fact that she lost to Becky Lynch. The loss is really affecting Charlotte, and that I like to see because I think Charlotte Flair on a journey of self-discovery seems like a very interesting story and a lot more interesting than just I'm genetically superior, I am the best. I mean, maybe it's not great to have like your super tall blonde woman being like I'm genetically superior. I think maybe they figured out that was not in the best taste. So I like the whole like Charlotte having to kind of find herself and react to the loss and that kind of thing. So I'm fine with the team as it shakes out. It's kind of who it was always going to be, but it bums me out that Asuka's just kind of there.
hopefully she gets a good showing at Survivor Series. So, yeah. Main event time, Jeff Hardy versus Samoa Joe, Miz and Bryan on commentary. In the end, Samoa Joe gets the win with Coquina Clutch. After the match, Joe runs up to Bryan and gloats in his face. They start brawling. Miz breaks up, but Bryan drops him. Shane McMahon runs down to break it up, and Bryan ends up going for Shane. Doesn't know it's him. Shane looks angry. Bryan storms away up the ramp. And I think this makes sense. Like, if you're going to turn Shane heel, it has to be with Bryan. It goes back to the dissension earlier on this year. And, like, I do like the idea of Shane just completely fucking Bryan, because it might be a way to get Bryan as a good babyface again. Like, because I like the idea of, like, Shane kind of fucking Bryan, and then Bryan just, like, on a mission to beat the shit out of Shane McMahon.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that. I'm really glad that Samoa Joe won this match, just to put that out there. It was very interesting listening to Bryan and Miz on commentary, because I feel like their dynamic is still very intriguing to me, even though we've seen it for months. It's what did Bryan say? I'm trying to remember what it was. Like, Miz was talking about Miz was talking about how he has helped build stars in the past. He was like, remember Damian Mizdow, remember Alex Riley, remember, you know, like all these people, the Miztourage. And Daniel Bryan was like, right, you've been about keeping people below you and keeping them kind of in your servitude. Or I forget how exactly they worded it. But the tension between them still feels very real and still feels very interesting. So them as co-captains, it's kind of like, huh, that is interesting. But the more Miz talks and the more Bryan talks back at him, I'm kind of more on Miz's side. Like, I don't know, Daniel Bryan, like, saying that Daniel Bryan hasn't been that intriguing or that exciting or that interesting since his comeback. Like, I love Daniel Bryan. He's one of my very favorite wrestlers, but Miz kind of has a point there, right? And so for Bryan to kind of be a smug prick about it, I'm just like, no, don't be a dickhead, Daniel Bryan. Like, I didn't necessarily like that Daniel Bryan attacked Samoa Joe, because, like, Samoa Joe was taunting him for sure, but I was like, no, don't become a hothead. Don't become like Shane McMahon, because it felt like Daniel Bryan was acting like Shane McMahon at this point, and it just kind of bugged me. But I mean, eventually I'm sure that it is going to lead to Shane versus Bryan. It just seemed like on this episode, it didn't really seem clear whether we were supposed to be booing Shane McMahon or not, because I mean, he was a lot more dickhead like last year and we were still supposed to cheer him. So it's kind of confusing. But I want Daniel Bryan to become more interesting. Like, I would kind of love if Daniel Bryan had to go on this a similar self, like, journey of self-discovery or whatever as Charlotte after, you know, losing to AJ Styles and not really, like, coming out super on top in his feud with The Miz. I mean, he did beat The Miz once, but it'd be interesting if we got to see more, like, babyface underdog Daniel Bryan, which I guess we could accomplish with a Shane McMahon heel turn and, you know, the authority trying to keep him down or whatever, which is kind of what got Daniel Bryan over in the first place. I don't know. There are a lot of dynamics in play, and I guess we'll see how things shake out at Survivor Series, but I'm kind of just really on the Miz's side, and I don't know how to feel about the world.
Overall, where would your thumb be for SmackDown?
This is a thumbs up episode for me, even though I have a lot of complaints. Nikki Cross appeared and had a match with Becky Lynch, and it was real good. And the New Day and the Usos match was incredible. And I mean, there was nothing really like bad on it except for my complaints about the women's segment. But yeah, it's a thumbs up for me. It advanced some things.
Yeah, big ol' thumbs up for me. Really enjoyed this. I liked all the shenanigans with Bryan and Miz for Survivor Series. I liked the women's thing with Becky Lynch and the debut of Nikki. We had really good wrestling with the New Day and the Usos and Jeff and Samoa Joe and Rey and Almas. So yeah, I thought it was really good. To play us out though, here is the music of The Best in the World.
Do we have to?
He's the best in the world, Sondra. I can't. It's not my fault.
I mean, on the episode where Nikki Cross debuts, we're playing Shane McMahon's theme.
Sondra Ruth RW, Kenny MC 1985, and Nikki Cross has debuted, and that's amazing, but that's not really as important as Shane McMahon is the best in the world.
He's just doing
wrestling.
This to goad me. He's just doing this so that I just sit here and go, I hate the world.
Here comes the money.
Fucking
bye, everybody.
Man. Bye.
Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talk.
Here comes the money.
Ha 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 ha!